Welcome to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast for Sunday, April 24th, 2016. The Reverend Joanne Martindale is preaching. The sermon today is Talitha Kum, Little Girl, I Say to You, Get Up. The New Testament reading is Mark chapter 5, verses 21 through 43.
They're amazing. They are absolutely amazing. I have my mic on. Can you hear it? I have my mic on. Yeah? Okay. Good. Let us pray. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts and minds be acceptable to you, O God, who is our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Let's try to understand and feel for a moment the life of the hemorrhaging woman. 4,380 days you have been bleeding. Whether literally or figuratively, try to imagine that in your own life. In the scope of your life, have you ever had days or weeks when you felt like the bucket of your life had a hole in it? That it leaks faster than you can fill it, and no matter what you do, and no matter how hard you work, no matter where you go and what you try, you just can't fill it up. Have you had weeks, months, or even years when you feel like that, when work or play or friends or family leave you a bit empty and restless and searching? You can't seem to get enough. The outflow is greater than the inflow. You are left drained of life, tired and weak, frustrated, hopeless, angry, resentful, sorrowful, grieving, fearful that you will never have the life that you want. If you feel any part of that, if you know what it's like, perhaps then you know what the hemorrhaging woman was feeling in today's gospel. We don't know her name. We don't know where she came from. She could be any of us, really. She's anonymous, another face in the crowd. What we do know is that she's sick, she's desperate, and in need. She has been bleeding for 12 years, 4,380 days, just to break it down for us, to really try to understand. In all that time, no one has been able to help her. She spent all that she had, time and money, energy, on healing practitioners. She's only gotten worse. Day after day and week after week, month after month, for her, year after year, it's been the same. Blood. She is a walking fountain of blood. The woman's condition, though, is more than just physical. She's losing more than blood. She's losing her life, her warmth, her vitality, her fruitfulness. And that's a spiritual matter. Life and death are always spiritual matters. At one level, this is the story of an individual woman. At another level, it is the human story. Her story is our story. This story is as much about men as it is about women. Drained of life, we go through the motions some days. We're alive sometimes, but not really living. We've all had days like that. We feel disconnected, isolated, alone, men and women, rich and poor, every one of us having a day or weeks or years when we felt alone and isolated. Sometimes we convince ourselves that once this or that happens, everything will be better. As soon as he changes, or as soon as she does what I want, or as soon as the economy gets better, or as soon as I have a new job, or as soon as I have enough money, as soon as I have more time, as soon as I get through this project, as soon as I retire, how many of us have said that? A few in the room. As soon as the world is less violent, we all have our as soon as, then this will happen. I suspect the bleeding woman spent many of the last 4,380 days thinking, as soon as I get well, as soon as someone sees me, as soon as. Today, however, in our gospel, that day is different. Something in her has changed, shifted. She's heard about who? She's heard about Jesus. Maybe she heard about his teaching, about him casting out demons, about him healing the sick, or about him calming the storm. We don't know what she heard about Jesus, but it was enough to make her believe that she is more than just a bleeding woman, more than just her disease. She would no longer wait on others to fix her. She refused to be identified with the circumstances of her life. Today she would reach beyond those circumstances. Beyond the circumstances of her life. Today she would reach beyond those and literally take matters into her own hands. Deep within, she feels and she knows, if only I touch his cloak, I will be healed. No matter how much we bleed, the truth of those words flows through our veins. She knows that Jesus offers a life that is unleakable, a life that can never be drained from her. She believes that Jesus has the power to heal her. This unnamed woman in this story touches Jesus' cloak. In that moment, she is transfused with and by the power of God. It was just enough to touch his cloak. The connection was made and a relationship established. Life no longer leaked out of her, but flowed into her. The hemorrhaging stopped, but the healing continued. Who touched my clothes? Jesus asked. He was calling out to the crowd. He would not allow her to remain a nameless face in the crowd. He would not allow her to drift off into anonymity. He named her daughter and sent her out on the path of peace, not disease. She would no longer be identified as that bleeding woman. Now she is a daughter of the King. She has identity, she has a place, and a relationship. She's been healed and made whole. She is now fully alive and ready to indeed go in peace. That is the unleakable life that Jesus offers each one of us. We no longer have to live drained of life. We too can know ourselves to be called son or daughter. We too can walk the path of peace, fully alive. If we but touch his clothes, we too will be healed. Every moment holds before us the opportunity to touch. That means we must reach beyond some days the circumstances of our lives that can overshadow us and overtake us some days. You know what I'm talking about. We can no longer live as soon as lives. It means we must take matters into our own hands. Now, I'm not suggesting that we are in control of life, because anyone over the age of 25 knows that. Or maybe over the age of 18, depending on if you're mature. We have some students in here that are. But we have a choice, and we have a responsibility. In our other healing story, Jesus says to Jairus' daughter in Aramaic, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." I don't know about you, but if Jesus said to me, young woman, get up, okay, he might say middle-aged woman, get up at this point, but I would get up, right? If Jesus told me to get up, if he told me to live and to rise and to stand and to change, I would. I believe in miracles. I believe that Jesus still does them today through us. If we pay attention to the miracles that happened around us and in us, through each other. I guess since it's my last Sunday of preaching, I want to tell you a story about my son. I don't believe I've told some of you about my son, Ryan. Ryan was diagnosed with autism at age 3. He didn't speak until he was 5. In preschool, his teacher said that I should take him to a neurologist because he wasn't playing with other children and he was biting them and he was preoccupied with fans and he didn't want to be touched. Well, I knew he was different from my older son, Quinn, but I didn't know quite what that meant. So I took him to a neurologist and the neurologist said that he was indeed on the autism spectrum, and I was shocked and I didn't know what that meant, and all I could think of is Rain Man, you know, the movie with, who's it with? Dustin Hoffman, right. And all I can think of is going to be this kid that's brilliant, but he can't negotiate life. And this is what was in my head. And like other parents of children who suffer with autism, I was panicked and I didn't know what to do. And for days I was not knowing what to do until I got on my knees and I said, "What on earth do you want me to do about this? I will give him everything I have." So, like a good Presbyterian, I went to conferences and I went to hear Temple Grandin. Those of you who don't know her, she's autism specialist. She's amazing. She's actually going to speak in Davis pretty soon. But anyway, and like I often do, I throw myself and try to understand into my learning. And if my son was going to get well, I knew I had to deal with this and understand it. So I researched it and I went to groups with other parents and I went to conferences and I learned the PEC system, picture communication exchange system. In order to help Ryan learn to speak. The doctor said that if Ryan didn't learn how to speak before the age of 5, he probably wouldn't. So I had 2 years. So he was the priority. I put him in a special preschool handicap class. I learned PECs, and I did with him every night for two and a half hours, this board, this Velcro board with all these things on it that he would have to pull off something that was a chair and then try to say it, pull off a table, say table, that kind of thing. I asked for a miracle on multiple occasions. And sometimes we get our miracles and sometimes we don't. And I don't always understand why we do and why we don't. I think that could be a theological discussion for another time. But each day through the teachers and the aides and my friends and I, we threw ourselves into helping Ryan. And we made that Velcro board and Ryan was motivated by M&Ms and food. Nothing has changed. It's just still the first thing he asks about when I'm going to go up for Mother's Day to Denver. And he's, "Where are we going to go to eat?" I know, Ryan. It's all about the food. Anyway, so we did our best, and we struggled, and we had joys. And on his 5th birthday, after working for 2 hours like we did every night, Ryan looked me in the eye, which doesn't happen much with an autistic child. And he said, "I want a cookie, Mom." I had never heard such sweet words as that day. "I want a cookie, Mom." A whole sentence. Friends, I'm here to tell you that miracles do happen. I've seen them, not just in my own life, but in the lives of people around me over my 27 years in ministry. Miracles happen. Ryan will be a senior in college this fall. The boy who bit kids, couldn't speak, didn't like to wear clothes because of those annoying tags on the back of the shirts. He would rip them off, and he screamed in public, and he was too loud and too noisy, preoccupied with fans and spinning things. Now, not only he talks too much. I said that on purpose. But he's a resident assistant in a college dorm, getting good grades, helping other students adjust and cope with college life. Because he's been through some things. He's had some obstacles, like many of us in this congregation. My mother struggled with alcohol. My father died when I was young. My husband died. I have seen the traumas of war. You have also had obstacles and hardships in your own lives. When Jesus says to this little girl, I say to you, get up. That's the key. Jesus heals and lives are changed. Friends, I believe in miracles. I've seen them in my own life, my son's life, and in the lives of you over the last couple of years. I believe in miracles. So how do we stand up, act, live our faith, and change in the broken world around us? We begin by looking at the clothes Jesus wears. Now, stick with me here. Sometimes he draped himself in silence, in solitude, and prayer. Do you remember in the Bible where he does that? Sometimes he draped himself in mercy and forgiveness. Sometimes he draped himself with thanksgiving and gratitude. Sometimes he draped himself with compassion and generosity. He even got angry. Remember that? He draped himself with every emotion that he has. And always, 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 we are to embody Jesus with a self-giving love. The love that he showed to others. That's what we try to do each and every day. The very attributes and characteristics of Jesus' life are the clothes he wears and the clothes that we are to touch. Wherever you are living drained of life, touch the clothes of Christ. Connect to them in your own life. Let them transfuse you with his life, his love, his power. Touch and be healed. Touch and be named. And touch and go in peace. It has been my profound honor to serve with you and be part of this congregation for a little less than 2 years. You are an amazing congregation. I have given to you and I have received from you. You have allowed me to walk next to you, beside you, alongside you, sharing tears, laughter, joys. Your lives have touched me more than I can say in a sermon. Thank you for allowing me to work with your children, to hold lock-ins where your children could feel that this is their church. Thank you for doing lunches with me in your homes and in restaurants and sharing your lives and your stories and your failures and your joys. Thank you for sharing in the grief groups that I held and Sandra also held. Thank you for sharing in assisted living sites, for coming to Travis and helping with wounded veterans, singing at the commissary at Christmas time. Thank you for the kids that came up to Napa, the homeless shelter, for seeing beyond themselves. Thank you for taking communion with me and allowing me to be your pastor, one of your pastors. Thank you, kids at the lock-in, for giving me the charm bracelet where you each picked out a charm that was about your personality and put it on the charm bracelet for me at the lock-in. That was a totally awesome gift. And I will wear it, and that will continue to remind me of you and your lives and how you are unique. Veterans, thank you for sharing your stories of war, for your sacrifice and your redemption. Thank you for the corsage you gave me 2 weeks ago when I took you out to breakfast, and for standing and for saluting me. I am profoundly honored that you did that, and I salute you. To the choir and to Michael, your music blesses me beyond words. My mother was a concert pianist, and there was always music in our homes. And often what you sing reminds me of her and her love and her music and the way that she would sit down every Sunday and play the piano for hours. It's how I connect to God often. Every morning I sing. That's my spiritual time with God. I work through the hymns. I go through about 8 times through the hymnal throughout a given year, singing hymns every morning to God. Singing is profound to me. I love it. It's how I connect with God. And when you sing, I connect with God. And I thank you. To Julia, who often works into the evening for this church, who organizes everything behind the scenes, who've gotten me pizza more time than I could imagine for the kids, I thank you. Ron, it has been a gift to work alongside you. Thank you for always having my back, as they say in the military. You supported my crazy schedule, which I couldn't always control, and you always believed that the ministry I provided would be quality. It has been my honor to have your back too. It has been so good to have a Presbyterian colleague that you trust and admire. Thank you. And congregation, last but not least, thank you for your profound love of each other and of me. I will always take your love, your lessons, your joy, your friendship with me, and I am changed because of you. My benediction today comes from our Old Testament passage. It says, O Lord, you turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth or burden and clothed me with joy. that my heart may sing to you and that I may not ever be silent. Friends, it's been my gift to be your pastor. Thank you for allowing me into your lives. I love you with all my heart. Amen.
You have been listening to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast. To learn more about Community Presbyterian Church and its ministries, come visit us at 2800 Georgia Street in Vallejo, California, or visit our website, cpcvallejo.org. You can also email us at cpcvallejo@sbcglobal.net. Have a blessed day.